Hey, it's Melissa from Melissa in the Morning on WICC 600. And thanks for checking out the podcast right here. If you want, you can always subscribe, share, and like it. Hope to see you guys soon. Thanks. So I talked about this story with you guys on my last show. Prescription drugs. Many of them are ridiculously expensive. And it turns out there's a way for many people that they can get it for a much cheaper price. But the drug companies don't tell you that. The pharmacies don't tell you that. And sometimes even your doctor, without knowing, won't tell you that either. So I wanted to share this with you, the reality that we're all facing, and maybe some ways to help you not have to pay ridiculous amounts of money. So for that, my dad is here, Alan Shekatoff. He's been on the show before. Whenever we have health insurance or any kind of health needs on the show, we talk to my dad about it. He's been a broker in Fairfield for a very long time, has a very successful brokerage, an independent that he created on his own. Dad, first of all, talk about just first of all the reality of this. What do you find your clients are calling you about, very similar to what I went through recently when it comes to prescription drugs?
It's very common. We get them, you know, I would say every other day, although we do try and educate people. We have sent out emails, mass emails, to all of our clients, both individual and company, what we call employer group. But this is a common phenomenon that's been going on for, I would say, at least I've been familiar with it for the last 7-8 years.
Okay, but still, you know, this wasn't something like when we were kids that we saw this happening. This is something in the last decade or so that we're seeing these inflated prices for. I mean, how many drugs would you say? Like, are you talking, you know, thousands of different prescriptions?
Yes. Well, it doesn't apply to any of the generic drugs.
Okay.
Because those are already discounted versions of the brand names that were created. You're correct that many, many years ago, they probably didn't even have the majority of them, certainly not anywhere near as many injectable drugs,
mm-hmm.
For things like MS and rheumatoid arthritis and some severe ailments that require some of these new technology drugs that they've created. What people are not aware of, unless they're actually taking them, is the cost. They have no idea, especially if they're in a some kind of an insured plan, you know, again, whether it's individual or a group, where you have co-pays, not an HSA plan where you pay the whole price. But if you're in a plan that you have co-pays and you pay a $60 co-pay, you might just assume, well, the drug might cost $100 and I got it for $60. Sometimes the drug could cost in ranges of $1,000, $2,000, $3,000, $4,000
mm-hmm.
a month. I mean, it's insanely expensive. Some specifically like Enbrel, Humira, which are very popular because you see commercials on TV for them, for both MS and rheumatoid arthritis. I use those a lot. But those are very common, been around. Enbrel costs $3,000 a month. So you just tell me when you want me to get into this secret that you found out about, that we've known about for a while.
Yeah, this is I think the thing that blew my mind, because I've been very open with my audience that I got prescribed for Linzess after my colonoscopy and everything. They all know about it. And when I got to the window, I was told it was going to be $700 for a 3-month supply. And I just about I drove away because I was like, this is lunacy. I'm just going to figure it out. And you told me about this coupon system, which I thought is also lunacy, but at least if people know about it, they don't have to walk away like I did. So what's the coupon deal?
So basically on all drugs, but specifically the brand name, typically expensive drugs, and they don't have to be in the thousands, like the drug you take, you know, that retails for close to $250 a month, and many are sold in 3-month supplies. Basically, the way it works, we suggest everybody, you Google the name of the drug or the manufacturer, or both. But in most cases, if you do the name of the drug, they'll actually show you who manufactures it. But then if you start looking, if they give you a few different topics to look at, you look at cost, and then you also look at coupons. And you'll see in most cases a couple different ways they reference that. One is co-pay assistance plans, and the other is called financial assistance plans, or just print your coupon. It'll be that straightforward.
Mm-hmm.
And what they mean by all that is you can go in, it'll show you what the retail cost is of the drug. So, for instance, the drug you take, if you had looked, it typically will tell you a one-month supply. But if it said it's $263 retail, however, if you go on and you do this, you know, manufacturer's rebate, in essence, what it is, in your case, it saved you like $400. And there are plans for those $3,000 drugs, they have $10 copays.
That's crazy. It's crazy. And it really is as simple as, like, for me, I typed in Linzess coupon, and all I did was put my name, my date of birth, and my insurance information, and literally, boom, this coupon popped up, and the pharmacy was like, oh, well, you have a coupon. I'll acknowledge it. It was crazy to me, Dad. Like, I could not believe that until I showed them this piece of paper, they were going to let me pay $700 when it really retailed for $300 for a three-month supply. Like, it blew my mind. It blew
there
my mind.
There are pharmacies that are usually a little bit more helpful than that. In many cases, I know the CVS that we go to, because that drug you're referring to, Mom takes the same one.
Yeah, it's genetic, so there you go.
And I have done that more than a couple times.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't matter how much money you earn. If you get a drug that and you're standing in line, no less, and they say it's going to cost $700, that certainly will shake you up a bit.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want to spend that much on something, and that's monthly. It's not like it's a one-time for the year. So... it's a very well-known secret that's, I found out actually from a client of mine whose daughter happens to take Enbrel. Really sad that she's like 26 years old, but she's on a drug that costs $3,000. And he called the manufacturer and they said, you should go online and do what I just told you to do. And they have these plans because I've now got 7 different clients that take that drug. It's
wow.
A very popular one.
Mm-hmm.
And basically pay their $10 copay.
That's crazy.
It's actually called the copay assistance plan. The only time it doesn't work, certainly as effectively, if ever, is if you're on Medicare.
Those
Part D plans, they don't apply to those. They basically will tell you if you're on an individual plan or a commercial plan, which is another name for a group plan.
Right.
It's open game.
Gotcha.
If, on the other hand, you're on TRICARE, Medicare, Medicaid, they don't apply to those in most cases.
I noticed that because I had a couple people call in last week who were Medicare approved and they wouldn't take the coupon. Yeah. It wasn't going to work.
Some do, but not the majority. I mean, that's just unfortunately the way it is. But they, you know, look, if you have any faith in our government, which I don't have a whole lot of, but at some point they are working on, and I know the last administration, same thing, they're working on, you know, negotiating drug prices down by the lowest country available, which is what Trump did. And I know Biden's group is doing something similar where they're trying to at least, if you could get the same drug manufactured and buy it in Canada for 10 cents on a dollar, they're trying to get it where we can get it at the same price they do.
Mm-hmm. Well, we could just start by having the drug companies not inflate the prices so that we print out a stupid coupon. But I mean, that's fine, too. Yeah. Totally.
That would be the easy answer, but we look at it a little bit more that maybe they're helping people live longer and better lives because of some of these drugs. I mean, I give the drug companies credit, even with what they've done with vaccines in record time.
Sure.
They obviously have the smarts to make these drugs. The FDA, on the other hand, takes forever to approve them.
Right.
Obviously, our last president moved that process along very quickly, almost in warp speed. to say, basically, that's the problem sometimes is they continually create new drugs, but it takes so long for them to be approved.
Yeah.
And by the time they spend whatever on research and development, they feel justified to charge these outrageous fees, and they are outrageous.
So sketchy. Well, Dad, thank you for outlining this for us this morning. I appreciate it, and I'm sure we'll talk again really soon.
I'll be looking forward to it.
All right. Thank you. That's my dad, Alan Shekatoff, who is a local health insurance broker here in Fairfield County. And you can always call for his services, but he certainly comes on the show whenever we have health insurance needs by any of you.
The latest from the state capitol about your own neighborhood. Connecticut Senate Majority Leader Bob Duff stops by Melissa in the morning. Now on WICC 600.
Good morning, Senator Duff. Wow, it's going to be a really busy week in Hartford, including, it sounds like, this week in the state Senate, it's going to be a big discussion on vaccine religious exemptions. first of all, I would love to know sort of your opinion on this and sort of the in the same time frame that we're now hearing about two measles cases while it was one household in Fairfield County, right in your district. You know, what are sort of your thoughts on the vaccine religious exemptions, you know, moving forward in the Senate? Like, do you think as the bill stands right now, it works?
Good morning. Yeah, I think that, you know, the measles cases that we have down here in Fairfield County are really just a it's like a canary in a coal mine right now. And we need to make sure that we're doing everything possible to keep our children healthy and safe and our residents healthy and safe. And that's why this bill is so important. The bill originally was proposed a few years ago, and it's been a long and difficult debate, but it was well before COVID even came along and before we even knew what COVID was, because we know that measles cases are on the rise and people using non-medical exemptions or religious exemptions were on the rise, and that, you know, the trends were going in the wrong direction, and people were using these exemptions as loopholes in the law in order not to vaccinate their children. So nobody's forcing anybody to get vaccinated, but these are the vaccinations that have been mandated for many years, for decades, for children to attend schools. And that's why it's important for us to make sure that we continue to put health and safety first. We continue to make sure that herd immunity is still around our school children and that people are not using these types of loopholes in order to get around what are safe, healthy, and effective vaccinations that have been used for decades.
So, Senator Duff, I'm curious because I'm okay with the you know, going forward with this bill. It does not impact our family at all because our son is vaccinated fully. So that's not to be, you know, sensitive towards anybody. I'm just saying it doesn't really impact our family at all. It doesn't really matter if the bill passes for me, my family. But with that being said, I will say from a reporter standpoint, I think it's a little concerning, though, that we still don't really have an answer in this bill. What happens to those families? Like, I know kindergarten and up, you are grandfathered in if you've already got the exemption. But what about my generation who's got, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5 year olds who are just entering school? You know, what happens to them if they don't get if they're not getting the exemption and they don't want to vaccinate their children, are, you know, and they're being denied going to public school? What's their option?
Well, I have to disagree with you because I do say that it does impact your family. Even if your children are completely vaccinated and you have others who are not vaccinated in schools, that does impact your family because that means that there are fewer kids who are fully vaccinated, and that puts everybody at risk. So people who are not vaccinating their children put my family, your family, everybody else's family at risk, even if our families collectively are all vaccinated. And what we're seeing is not only does it impact vaccinated families, but it also impacts immunocompromised children who cannot get vaccinated. So this is not some sort of individual choice about going to school that somehow I'm fine and so you can do what you want. This is a collective community impact of if we're all getting vaccinated, that means our communities are safe. If I'm getting vaccinated, but you're not getting your kids vaccinated, that puts everybody's children at risk. And for that, that's why the policy of the state of Connecticut is you need to get vaccinated. If your children are not vaccinated, they cannot attend school.
Okay, so I stand corrected. You're right. I see exactly what you're saying there. But then, okay, so your kids can't attend school. We already live in a very expensive state, and we already tax like crazy on everybody. So now we're telling families you can't have your kids attend school. Are we giving them an option? If they can't go to public school, are we giving them an option other than to pay for private schooling or pay for someone to come into their homes? Like, we're not really giving an affordable option is, I guess, what I'm saying.
If you want to have the tax question, we can talk about that and why we duplicate services for 169 towns and cities and why we should have different policy options. And, you know, that's a different conversation. I'm happy to have that conversation with you. So, you know, throw that editorial comment in there, but we can have that conversation about taxation if you like. As far as with regard to if somebody's not fully vaccinated, then a child cannot attend school. then a parent has to make a decision as to what they want to do. But the policy of the state of Connecticut should be that children need to be vaccinated unless there is some sort of immunocompromised status where between a doctor and a parent there is the decision not to vaccinate. But if people are using a non-medical exemption, like a religious exemption, as merely a loophole to not vaccinate their children, because, mind you, there is no major religion out there that says that children should not be vaccinated, then they cannot attend school.
Okay, so we're going to keep the bill exactly as is, Senator Duff, that you just can't attend public school and you got to figure it out.
That will be the policy of the state of Connecticut. If there's any change, it would have to go back to the House.
Okay, because I know when I talked to Governor Lamont about it, he seemed kind of concerned about the fact that we don't have an option in place. He does plan to sign the bill, but he said he thought maybe we come up with something virtual, you know, something like that. But he did say that that's kind of a point that he's a little concerned about, that we're not really giving an affordable option to people who don't want to get their kids vaccinated and that they can't go to public school.
I welcome the conversation with the governor.
Okay. Senator Duff, I know we were talking about religious exemptions. I know that's going to be discussed in the Senate this week. But something that kind of came up in our conversation before the break, I was saying that it's expensive to live in Connecticut. And I know you found that to be like an editorial. But I know, apart from this show, I am a taxpayer in Connecticut. I've lived here almost my entire life. And it is expensive. I mean, ask the governor or anybody else who lives here. They're going to tell you that, especially my generation, you're talking about the millennials, it's very hard to retain us here. Like, other than the fact that my family lives here, I would probably leave Connecticut tomorrow because it's so expensive with a dual income. So that's where I'm coming from as far as a taxpayer is concerned. I do think it's very expensive. You don't agree with that?
No, I didn't say that. You said prior about taxes, and you didn't say anything about being expensive. I agree it's expensive to live here in Connecticut. You mentioned the word taxes, and I said we can have that conversation about taxes if you'd like, and I'm very happy to have that conversation.
Oh, okay, great.
So I understand what you're saying, and I'm not denying that Connecticut is a high-cost state. We also, people demand a lot of services here in the state of Connecticut. So, you know, you have people want good schools, they want a lot of services, and those things cost money. However, I will say that one of the reasons why taxes are higher in the state is that we duplicate efforts, as I related to earlier, 169 times with 169 municipalities and 162 school districts. We have worked over the years to try and bring along a more regional cooperation, whether it's in education, whether it's in municipal services, whether it's in zoning, whether it's in a number of different things. And we get rebuffed every single time by forces outside the Capitol who come in and lobby and basically kill most of these bills because people are afraid of change. A lot of these things have correlation to how they would impact taxes, because most of the taxes state taxes go back to municipalities, and then we have high property taxes as well, because, again, you're duplicating services 169 times in a state of 3.5 million people. I mean, there are counties in California that are larger than the state of Connecticut that do things one or two times rather than 169 times. And so those are things that many of us have been trying to deal with over the years, to reduce taxes and try to bring along better efficiencies as much as we can. I will tell people that with regard to our state government is the smallest it's been since probably the per capita since the 1950s, and we have one of the smallest state governments across the entire country as it relates per capita. We have cut billions of dollars in discretionary spending. We have probably thousands fewer state employees. We have made different agreements with state employees, saving tens of billions of dollars over 20 years. So we have right-sized our state government. In a lot of ways, as people see that, we now can do a lot of services with Department of Motor Vehicles and others online. So we're working hard on those kinds of things. But the other types of services that either people demand or the fact that we're duplicating so many efforts is what keeps taxes high. And we don't have county government. I'm not advocating for that. You can't even do that in our state constitution. But we don't do enough across communities that provide any kind of relief to taxpayers. And that's part part of the problem as to why taxes are higher here in the state of Connecticut.
So, Senator Duff, if you don't mind me asking, that all makes sense. My question is the recently proposed last week, the latest round of wanting to tax what's called the rich, which honestly to me seems like just from growing up in Fairfield and now New Haven County, that's a lot of Fairfield County residents who would basically be footing the bill on this one, which you also represent as well. I'm just curious, with the American Rescue Plan that's coming our way, even the governor has said, I don't know why we keep proposing taxes. Why are we doing that right now when we are getting all this federal money?
Well, that's what came out of the Finance Committee Thursday, and it's all part of the process of negotiating a budget with the Executive Branch. Appropriations Committee did their work. The Finance Committee did their work. It'll now be up to the chairs to negotiate with the Office of Policy Management, legislative leaders to negotiate with the governor's office and the governor himself. We'll get a budget together. I think people will be very happy with what we do. There is an effort to work to help our middle class and to help, whether it's a child tax credit, whether it's earned income tax credit. We have reduced and eliminated taxes on Social Security income. We're reducing and eliminating taxes on 401k pensions and other retirement incomes. We have reduced veterans taxes for them as well. And we have reduced business taxes also. So we're continually looking to ensuring that the middle class is being helped. We're asking sometimes others who can afford to pay a little more to pay a little bit more. But this is all part of a process that will get worked out before the legislature finishes up on June 9th.
All right. Senator Bob Duff, we appreciate your extra time this morning. Thank you so much. And we'll talk again next week.
Thank you.
What's going on in the Capitol and how it affects you? State Senator Tony Wong joins Melissa in the Morning right now on WICC 600.
All right, Senator Wong, I'm going to give you the same two topics I just gave to Senator Duff. So let's start with vaccine exemptions. I know the Senate is set to talk about this week. And to me, it sounded like from the governor, we still don't have a concrete answer as to what you do with kids who are not exempt going forward. What is the option for them that's affordable for public schooling? According to Senator Duff, it is what it is. If you don't want to get your kids vaccinated and this passes, you're basically out of luck. You got to figure out what you're going to do for your kids. Your thoughts on the fact that we haven't found an answer or solution that to me is affordable for taxpayers to be able to put their kids elsewhere if they can't go to public schools?
Good morning, Melissa. And it is a great idea for you to get perspectives, maybe sometimes contrasting, from Senator Duff and myself. I do believe that awareness and education is essential and critical. Look, I believe in vaccines. My children were fully vaccinated of the over 70-plus vaccine shots during their K to 12th grade experience. And I myself had gotten my COVID shots. And I am actually the co-chair of the Bioscience Caucus, a bipartisan Bioscience Caucus. So I believe in vaccines. I believe in the science of pharma in making positive difference in people's lives. However, at the same time, I know there are many people that have contrasting views. Now, the recent news of the two cases of the measles in Fairfield County has obviously raised alarm and it's been raised up. But then on the other counterpoint is the fact that we had a recent pause that was just now clarified on the Johnson & Johnson vaccine. So there are anecdotal facts on both sides of the argument that people can point to. And ultimately, you're going to have a disagreement in this, mm-hmm. that individuals have differing opinions. For me, I believe in vaccines, but at the same time, I also believe in personal body rights. I believe in a parent's right to make the choices. That's why I think education and awareness is critical. But ultimately, as a state power, we are now under this law that we're considering on Tuesday to say to these parents, to say to individuals that the state knows what is best for you to inject into your own body, whether it's valid or not. The fact of the matter is we are saying that state rights supersedes individual parental rights. That is the challenge that I have. The second point in regards to the requirement of education. Well, Connecticut, unlike the other states that have passed this, and there's only been five other states. They are New York, California, West Virginia, and Louisiana, and Maine. don't you? I'm amazed at the contrast between the states and their unique personalities in passing this law. But only five states have passed this law in this country.
Hmm.
But only one. Connecticut has educational access as part of its constitutional requirement.
That's what I think is the big thing here, because I agree with a lot of what you're saying, Senator Wong. I personally am okay. I know that my opinion doesn't really matter, but I know, like, as far as vaccine exemption, I do think if you are medically exempt, totally. I do think that there are loopholes in the system. I do think, because I know people who personally, like, I grew up with kids who personally would say that they're atheists, but that they would say they have a religious exemption. Like, so I've seen it firsthand where people use the loophole. Not everyone, but there are people who use the loophole. So in that regard, I do understand kind of tightening that up a little bit. And I do understand the safety for immunocompromised, for kids, you know, so I get that. But I think, okay, if this does pass, let's say it passes, I think the fact that you're still going to collect taxpayer money on public school systems, but you're going to deny people to allow their kids to go to public school, or you're going to tell them, figure it out, pay for it out of pocket, like have someone come to your house or pay for private schooling, that just can't be the answer as far as I'm concerned. Like, I see one side, but as far as not having a solution for people and you're just denying them public schooling, like, that to me just seems flat out wrong.
It is wrong, because we have a constitutional right in this state to provide a right and responsibility to provide free education to every child.
Right.
So
and you're paying for it.
Question.
That's what your tax dollars go towards. Part of it goes towards the schools.
But, Melissa, we've had this debate for the last 4 years.
Right.
You think that we have tried to address this problem. Now, that's the challenge I have in being a co-ranking member of the Public Health Committee during this debate. We asked the Commissioner of Public Health. We asked the Commissioner of the Department of Education, what are your plans? What are the fiscal constraints on the state of Connecticut and its taxpayers that we will now have to provide a constitutional right to educate if we kick these kids out of school? The other part is we can talk about remote learning, but the reality, what we learned from COVID, is that social-emotional dynamics is very, very important to the part of the education process. Another point is we are now creating a two-tier treatment system of individuals, and with the onslaught of looking at discrimination and looking at segmentation and treating people differently because of certain background, certain color. This is another form where we're saying, because you're not doing it, you're different. We're going to treat you differently. And that's a fundamental challenge I have as well. Look, government is not easy, but government powers need to be balanced with respecting people's individual rights, particularly what they put into their body, and also crossing the line in regards to parental rights. When does the governmental power have greater control over a parent's perspective on what is best for their child?
The only thing that I can understand the side where the government is coming from is the fact that you are exposing your kids to other kids. I get that. I mean, I know for, like I said, in our household, Chase is fully vaccinated, so I don't worry about Chase. They show efficacy. I don't think Chase will contract anything if he's around kids who are not vaccinated. But, you know, I do understand the kids who are medically exempt. I do get that, and they also have a right to go to school and not be exposed to something because people don't want to do the research and people don't want to understand what's actually in these vaccines. Like, I get that side of it. I just think the fact that we're still going to go forward with this, possibly, and we're not going to have something in there. Like, look, I look at the House and the fact that they said, okay, you know what, it's kind of weird. It's funny, like, week to week, Senator Wong, you and I were just talking last week how it's lunacy that you're going to allow 7th and up to be exempt, but not pre-K through sixth graders. Like, and they changed that and they fixed it. I just think it's interesting. It's now reaching the Senate and we still haven't come up, honestly, with an affordable option for families that's fair if they don't want to get their kids vaccinated. Like, that to me blows my mind.
And I'll close by saying this on this issue. The fact that an amendment that allows a grandfathering from K to 12 of existing children undermines the argument of people who says there is a medical emergency for vaccination and for public health and safety, because you are still allowing individuals who are unvaccinated to stay in the school system.
Right.
So the amendment seems ironic to me that it undermines the very argument why you are overriding people's personal parental body choice rights against governmental powers, because you are allowing a two-tier system to exist anyway.
Right, because if you're in an elementary school, you got third, fourth, fifth, all those kids are all, if they're exempt, you still got kindergarteners who are coming in this year who are now not allowed, and they're exposed to them. That's I didn't even think of that. That's
an
true.
Irony
that's true.
Of epic proportions when you're looking about the medical urgency and emergency of this overriding state power when you at the same time says, okay, well, let other kids that are not vaccinated stay in because they're grandfathered.
It's a broken system. Yeah, it's definitely a broken bill for sure. Senator Wong, I know last week a pretty big announcement on taxing the quote-unquote rich. That seems to be brewing as the latest controversy in Hartford. Do lawmakers really understand who they are representing? I ask that because, you know, somebody like Senator Duff, who was just on about a half an hour ago, represents a portion of Fairfield County. And when I look at this proposed tax, honestly, this screams to me Fairfield County residents. I think this represents Fairfield County residents footing the bill, even New Haven County as well. And I just think it's shocking with the American Rescue Plan still in effect that we're going to propose a tax like this.
Well, Melissa, we're looking at a comprehensive package of nearly $3.2 billion of new or increased taxes for the next 3 years. And the consumption tax that's described is looking at about $500 million annually, which is looking at high-income earners. And look, they have to pay their fair share. But what's more onerous is the fact that the selectivity, but also the blaming in regards to the wealthy or the well-to-do. Look, the intention is noble, but you need to understand that we, in this COVID environment, with a government that's pretty much kind of been at status quo, we continue to increase spending. You know, we are a government that cannot stop spending money. So,
well, like, what are we spending money on?
Well, that's the point, is during this year's finance as well as appropriation hearing, the usual needs occur, but there was really no talk at all in regards to how we need to make structural changes on how government can be more efficient. I know the governor's talked about it, but we continue to raise spending in the state of Connecticut. But it's not only attacking the rich and the wealthy, because they're an easy target, because these tax proposals attack everybody in the state of Connecticut. For example, they created a mileage tax. Remember how tolls went away? Well, they went tolls in another way. They're going to look to tax trucks that deliver our goods and services all over
our state. Which
means our
goods are now going to be more expensive.
Correct. You're
right.
Going to disproportionately tax trucks, even though tolls was overwhelmingly rejected by the public. The other thing is they canceled property tax relief that people were expecting in regards to how they pay their local property taxes and the burden that they carry. The other part is we're now going to tax people for convenience fees on credit card uses, literally nearly $5 million. The other part is for all those small businesses that are looking to advertise on social media, right? We're going to now put an advertising tax. Now, that is a novel concept. Maryland tried it. It was absolutely devastating to small businesses that are trying to market on online.
Of course it was. Yeah.
But we look at taxing all across the board. And the challenge is this. We're going to now tax on cannabis legalization, which has not been realized. We're going to tax on related online gambling, which has not been realized. So we are looking to glean tax revenue and increase to nearly $3.2 billion. But nowhere have I said or have I been able to say that we made structural changes in government, creating greater efficiencies, easing the burden on taxpayers. No, we continue to tax, tax, tax. Now, this budget is balanced, Melissa, on nearly $2 billion of federal American Rescue Fund.
Ding, 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 ding.
And when you think about that, the governor has said we shouldn't be increasing taxes.
Right.
But
he's not for it.
We got 3.2. in addition to $2 billion of federal money that will fall off the cliff in 2 years.
Good Lord.
We have a diet that is unsustainable.
Right.
And what happens when things dry up and all of a sudden the COVID curtain is lifted on our economic challenges and we're going to find that foreclosures are increasing, that businesses are still struggling with regards to getting consumers back into the marketplace, and businesses are struggling to recruit and hire people? Ultimately, we are heading toward a cliff without understanding. With federal money, perhaps we should now instill a new discipline.
Mm.
But everybody is happy right now because the federal money is flowing, the state money is easing, and there's no additional burden. But ultimately, it comes to pay the bill.
Right, at some point.
We are not being disciplined
yeah.
enough because
yeah.
making cuts is painful, and we've not had a painful session this year.
Yeah. Well, Senator Wong, I appreciate getting your outlook on both these really important matters in Hartford, and please keep us posted. We'll talk again next week.
Absolutely. Tax increases affect everyone,
mm-hmm.
not just the wealthy. And the wealthy they have more options than the middle-class American and the middle-class Connecticut resident who just simply cannot afford to stay in the state.
Yeah, no kidding. I couldn't agree with you more. Senator Wong, thank you so much. We'll talk again next week.
All the Fairfield County news before anyone else. Melissa in the Morning on WICC 600.
Okay, now, I told you guys this story last summer and then again in the fall. A very good friend of mine, all the way back from my middle school years, Elissa, she posted to Facebook her beautiful dog, Fisher, went missing while they were vacationing in Ocean City, Maryland, and they were watching the fireworks, and somehow Fisher took off. And it was over 200 days where Fisher went missing. And then all of a sudden, last weekend, I see this update on Facebook, and I literally cried here in the studio, like bawling my eyes out. And immediately contacted Elissa, and I was like, you have to come on my show. We never have good news, like ever in this day and age. But this story was awesome. It's local. And Elissa is here now, actually. And girlfriend, I'm still like crying over this story. It's crazy. Like, it's crazy to me.
Well, first of all, hi. It's so good to hear your voice. Second of all, this is literally a dream come true. I mean, I don't think anyone loses their dog for 290 days. And, you know, granted, we never lost hope, but I think you never really anticipate getting them back. And like you said, there's no good news right now. And this
yeah.
was the best news that we could possibly think of.
So, I mean, first of all, walk us back to what happened. Like, what kind of triggered it? It was fireworks, wasn't it? I feel like I remember
yeah.
you saying that. Yeah.
Yeah. So essentially, we stay in a vacation home. Since my husband was a baby, but he's been staying in the same vacation home in Maryland. And Fisher, we believe, heard someone was like setting off illegal fireworks right next to our literally in the alleyway next to our vacation house. Mm-hmm. And at the time, my daughter was only 5 months old. So we as a group went up to them and said, hey, can you stop? We have a baby sleeping like right there. And, you know, getting a baby to sleep is sometimes difficult.
Forget it. Yeah.
So we went and talked to them and said, you know, could you stop? And they set off more fireworks as we were walking away. And we think Fisher heard the fireworks then and bolted out of the screen door. We think he pushed open the screen door.
Mm-hmm.
So then we went inside to go to sleep, and we all thought that he was asleep in my parents-in-law's room. So
mm-hmm.
we were like, oh, it's fine. You know, we'll see him in the morning. And in the morning, we get up, and so this probably happened at 1 a.m., and then in the morning, we get up, and we're like, okay, where's Fisher? And my in-laws are like, I don't know. Where is he? So we immediately realized he's missing.
Oh,
yeah,
gosh.
I mean, it was instant. And so we pretty much – we had – every single person on foot, on a bike, in their car, searching like crazy. We had some of us back at the house on like joining all the lost pet Facebook groups. I hired a dog tracker. We set up a GoFundMe because we had this. As soon as we realized by the end of the day, we sort of were like, we need to stay here. We're not going to leave without him. So
I was going to say, y'all stayed there for like a few weeks.
Yeah, we did. We had to. And then even after we kept coming, we came home, we kept going back to search for him and put up more signs. So the GoFundMe was really helpful because we did not have like we don't have the resources to stay in a vacation town for multiple weeks, you know? And so luckily the GoFundMe was great. People were able to donate and we were able to stay and, you know, print signs, laminate signs. And so that was great. And I mean, you know, Maryland, it's a 5-hour drive. It's not like it's not like driving into the city and coming home. So, you know, it was crazy. And we hired a dog tracker. And essentially what happened with the dog tracker was we had a confirmed sighting of him from the night he went missing at like 2 a.m. And so we at a bar. And so someone was like, oh, yeah, I saw that dog wandering, but it wouldn't come to me. And I was like, OK, well,
you're helpful.
So essentially, you know, we had the dog tracker started there, lost his scent in the middle of the street, which totally led us to believe that he was picked up by someone.
Mm.
You know, we started the Find Fisher Facebook group, which now it has almost 10,000 members. But
that's amazing.
In the height of really searching for Fisher, I think we had about 6,200. And, you know, just a lot of people have joined because they're excited that Fisher's home, you know. And,
yeah, of course.
But essentially, it was just unbelievable. It was unbelievable. People have come together. We never would have found him without this Facebook group because no one would have known.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and you're talking about multiple states as well, because where did Fisher end up? Like, where did you end up finding him?
So he was still in Maryland. He was in Baltimore, Maryland, which is about 2 hours
far,
from where we vacation. I know.
That boy moves, man.
Exactly. And we don't know if someone picked him up in Ocean City and then brought him back to Baltimore because he had a collar on. Like he had not our collar. He had on like a spike. Yeah. So he was clearly with someone, escaped from them, and then, you know, was found wandering. But essentially, we had people from Canada. I'm not kidding, from coast to coast, up and down, side to side, we had people in that Facebook group. So
that's amazing.
It was absolutely amazing. And now we've turned the Find Fisher Facebook group into a place where people can post their lost pet posters and hopefully get their lost pet posters shared all over the country in hopes of finding their dog or
cat.
This
is so
cool.
Yeah, it's so cool. And again, we're talking to Elissa Batista. I've known her since sixth grade. And and I just was so excited when I heard this story. I have to ask you, Elissa, I know that your daughter is just coming up on one. She did turn one. She's one now,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, she's 15 months old. Yeah.
Yeah, that's so beautiful. I know she's super young, but I know she was born into a family with a dog. I mean, did she immediately react to having Fisher home, or is she too young to realize?
Well, here's the thing is, so he's very boisterous. He's got a lot of energy, and he remembered her.
Oh, I
so
love
he
that.
He got really excited when he saw her. When I drove home from Maryland, Fisher had his head in the back seat, sitting on her car seat in the back seat.
Oh.
So it was like he like could smell her or something, you know. And so he remembered her. She got a little nervous just because he is a little bit bigger, you know, than what she's used to. And,
right.
And so she'll go over and she'll say, "Pet Fisher, Fisher treat." And, you know, it's really, really sweet.
That is so cool. I love this story. Now, Elissa, before I let you go, I know I've taken up a lot of your time. Who exactly, like, did you end up connecting with to go pick up Fisher, essentially? Like, you didn't go back to Maryland and just, like, aimlessly go to a random location. Who actually found Fisher?
So a man named Wayne Horn found Fisher, and his friend and neighbor posted it on Facebook while Wayne was, you know, taking care of Fish and giving him water and stuff. And then our family friends in Annapolis, which is like only 45 minutes, went and picked him up so that I could meet them at their house. Cause I didn't get in and I didn't get to Maryland until about 12:30, you know, in the morning.
Sure. Of course.
So,
yeah.
So a wonderful man named Wayne Horn found him, and we are just forever indebted to him.
That is such a cool story. I'm telling you, this is a story for 2021. As far as I'm concerned, this is at the top of my list. Elissa, I am so happy for you and your family. Thank you so much for coming on and sharing it this morning. And
thank you so much, Melissa.
Yeah, give Fisher a hug for me. He's so stinking cute. I can't stand it. Like, I literally am still crying over him. So thank you.
Oh, my goodness. I will. We'll talk soon.